You have found Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. Past episodes of the Authentic Business Adventures program can be found on the podcast link at drawincustomers.com. We are coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Radio Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kademan, entrepreneur, author, speaker, and helpful coach to small business owners across the country. Today, we're welcoming slash preparing to learn from Lyle Hill, president at Glass.com. Lyle, how are you doing today?
Doing good, James. How about you?
I am excited.
Good.
You showed me, you sent me an email with all that you have going on, and that is a long list. All that you've done and accomplished in the auto glass world, all that jazz.
Well, I'm old, you know,
so yeah. Experience.
After all these years, you should have done something.
Sure, yeah. Right? That's fair. Right. Yeah, it's interesting. It was neat to see. I'm used to seeing resumes from people that are 4 pages long, and they have a work history that's maybe 2 years old. They're just jobs that they've held for a week or two, yeah. But they felt like they had to put on their resume. So you, I'm like, you've actually accomplished something.
Well, I think part of that was because I stayed with the same company my entire life.
Yeah, you know? That could be.
So my entire career was 49 years with the same basic organization.
Yeah, yeah, that is cool.
Yeah.
One thing that I want to ask you before I forget is how did you guys end up with glass.com, the domain name?
We got lucky.
Okay.
In that crazy era 15, 20 years ago,
yeah,
when everybody's grabbing everything,
mm-hmm.
Some people took the domain early on and really had... They were artists. They had nothing to do with architectural or automotive glass. They were basically artists.
Like stained glass or something?
Yeah,
like
different kinds of art glass. And at a certain point in time, they were looking for someone to buy it. And and my partner in this venture, Deb Levy, was wise enough and forward-looking enough to pick it up.
Smart.
Yeah.
That's genius. So how long ago were we talking? We're talking 15 years?
Oh, 20? Yeah. Okay. Probably a little more than that now. Probably closer to 17, 18. I lose track.
Sure.
Yeah.
So the internet was still roughly infancy?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Early on.
That is cool.
Yes.
And was the intention when you got that to do what you're doing with it now?
Well, no, not at all. We were, I was still running my own business at that time, but I had some... joint business ventures with Deb Levy and a couple of other people.
Yeah.
And so we didn't know what we were going to do with it. She primarily wanted to use it for her publishing business.
Okay.
It was just a good site for, it's a great domain. So it was a good place.
Fantastic domain.
Yeah, a good place for lookups and contacts. And then, of course, all the employees and associates used the domain for their email address.
Sure.
But in the beginning, we didn't necessarily have any ideas or any thoughts about how or when or why to monetize it, so to speak.
Okay. Interesting. You just know you wanted it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I imagine you didn't have to pay millions of dollars for it or anything back in the day.
No, not then.
That's cool. You always hear about the people that picked up shoes.com or pizza.com or something like that. They were smart enough to grab just a word. We even see that now when I'm looking for clients, coaching clients that have a business, and they have a business name, and it's a couple words that have something to do with each other, and... Some other company has already grabbed them just to put the domain up for sale.
Yeah.
Which is...
Yeah. Well, at one time, I think probably three times as many domains for sale as were in use.
Funny.
You know, 20 years ago. But
That's awesome. Probably worse now.
Probably, yes.
That's funny. So just for the people that don't know, what does Glass.com do?
We're really an online domain that services consumers. We're a consumer-oriented domain site where people can go online and get certain glass questions answered.
Sure.
Get certain products offered. We source. Technically, it might be considered a lead aggregator.
Sure.
So
I think that's safe to say.
Yeah, and I think so. And we we aggregate leads. We place leads.
Mm-hmm.
Very selectively, by the way.
Okay.
And that's pretty much what we do.
Okay. And that's auto glass?
Auto glass primarily. Okay. However, we'll also do window tinting, window filming, flat glass, storefronts, repairs, tabletops, mirrors, anything related to glass.
Oh, you're getting into the furniture and stuff like that as well?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're not as developed there. We started with auto, so we're much further down the road with that than we would be with anything else.
I imagine the auto glass is more popular, though.
It is. a lot of it's an industry though that's pretty competitive.
Okay.
And pretty full. I mean, there's a lot of players. A lot of big players.
Okay.
So it's tough. It's tight.
Yeah, it was interesting when I was at the Auto Glass Week. I was talking with some guys that were in the industry, and they were telling about problems beyond just I can't find employees, which is kind of what everybody's complaining about now. But they were telling me about problems that I never would have considered to be, I wouldn't have even known that there were issues, right? There's the technology standpoint, which I had no idea from Auto Glass. I thought you pulled the glass out, you stick the new glass in, and away you go. Maybe some places still do that. I don't know.
Yeah. We stay away from those guys.
Yeah. Just throw more caulk on it.
Yeah.
And but just talking with them, competition, the equipment that they have to get, the evolution of the sensors for the lane sensors and adaptive cruise control and all that jazz that they have to deal with.
Yeah, it's tough. It's gotten much more much more technically difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And is that past 5 years, 10 years?
The whole lane departure, rain sensor, you know, all the add-ons that cars have now, everything kind of runs through the windshield. You know, it has to through the glass to pick up the signals and what have you.
Yeah.
So it's become complicated. And the big thing now, after a windshield is replaced, is the recalibration of that sensing equipment, if you will.
Yeah.
Trying to keep it simple.
Mm-hmm.
So a misinstalled windshield, you know, really creates havoc with the driver. I've heard the stories of guys driving down the road and the car stops because someone's pulled in front of them, but they're 300 yards in front of them.
Oh, you know, so the camera's misaligned. Yeah. Okay.
Or the beeper's going off because there's a car, you know, 12 feet to the left or right of them.
Sure.
And it's just not calibrated properly.
Oh, interesting.
So I've heard the horror stories.
Okay.
Read the horror stories.
Mm-hmm.
So the calibration's become a really big thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is so surreal to me. I was looking at this calibration thing. I was at Auto Glass Week.
Mm-hmm.
And one, I never knew that the recalibration was a thing until I was there. And I thought, that's crazy. Because I can't imagine every manufacturer, when they're putting the cars together, going through that whole process. Well, maybe they do, or maybe they just have a faster way to do it. But it seemed, watching the guys show their different systems for recalibration, I can't imagine that manufacturers are doing that for each car off the line.
Well, yeah, I think they would have to.
Okay.
Some kind of a quick calibration.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it has to do, I mean, there are indicators as to where a windshield should go.
Okay.
So I think, you know, when the car is getting its initial install, much more likely to hit awfully close, if not right on.
Sure.
You know, the installation point, so to speak.
Gotcha.
Whereas a replacement, a little different. You're ripping it apart, you're...
Oh.
The sealant's sometimes going on top of old sealant.
Sure.
You know, it's a little different.
Okay, so it's not exactly... And I imagine just even a 1 millimeter forward or back on one side or the other.
Yeah, it doesn't take much to mess it up.
Sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, and I'm not going to pretend to be a calibration expert.
From the sound of it, it didn't sound like anybody was.
Yeah, well, a lot of people are trying to be.
Sure.
And they'll get there.
But right.
It's a very, very much an evolving situation.
Sure.
Within the auto glass industry.
Right. Yeah. I imagine once it becomes more common and prevalent and every car needs it.
Then. Yeah, and ultimately, you know, 20 years from now, you'll have a recalibration device in your pocket probably. And
you'll
stick it on a stop sign somewhere and it'll tell you what to do, you know.
Right. I imagine there could be, it seemed like there could be a better way.
There will be. There is already.
But I guess from what I was looking at, it almost seems like the people that were selling the equipment had to reverse engineer whatever the manufacturers did.
Kinda. That's like, kinda true.
I get the impression the manufacturers didn't just say, this is how you make our cake.
I think the dealers might be more, I'm just surmising, more resistant to the auto glass guys getting into the calibration thing. I think the dealer, if I was a dealer, I'd want to do the calibration.
Sure.
I'd also want the auto glass guy to come to my shop and do the install.
Okay.
Because I'd like to get myself in the mix,
okay,
so to speak.
Just to make money or just to limit liability or both?
I think more financial than anything else. But, you know.
Gotcha. They want to get their hand in the cookie jar.
I think most dealers would like to get their hand.
I
apologize to all you dealers out
there.
But I think most dealers, like most business people, you know, want to find another revenue stream or revenue source whenever they can.
I imagine just overall... Car mechanics is probably teetering down. Just oil changes used to be every 3,000 miles. Now they're 5,000, 10,000 miles, whatever. And Yeah. Cars getting more efficient, and starters aren't blowing out every 2 weeks like they used to.
Much more efficient.
Yeah.
I had a gas station. Actually, owned a gas station when I was in college.
Did you really? Man, yeah. You've done everything.
No. I'm crazy. That was the problem. I'm a little bit like you. You know.
Sure. Yeah, that's true.
Why not try it? You know. And yeah, it was a completely different business. Completely different.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. Who was I talking to? I was talking to someone this morning. Because I had a customer appreciation event, and I tried to do this team building thing through a local company here, and I thought it'd be fun, team building, blah, blah, blah. But as soon as I mentioned team building to my clients, they're like, I'm busy. I got nothing going on. I just don't want to go to that. And I thought, what? I just want to do something different besides just going out for dinner or drinks, whatever.
Yeah.
And I was meeting with a client today, and he's like, you just always got to try something different.
And I'm like, yeah, well, mine was, I needed revenue.
You know, all right.
I needed to support myself. And,
sure.
Just an opportunity came along, and
so you bought a gas station, or you started one?
No, I bought one.
Okay.
Yeah, the guy I was working for, the guy.
Okay.
A very small 2-pump, 2-bay Citgo station.
Wow.
In Bourbonnais, Illinois.
All right.
And so I was working for the guy, pumping gas and doing oil changes and tire repairs and
Dang.
A muffler every now and then.
Sure.
And tune-ups, and he was an older guy. Was moving on and told people working for him, I don't have a buyer. I'm probably going to close it down unless one of you guys steps up.
Sure.
In those days, James, not to belabor this, the owner of the station didn't own the gas in the tanks.
Okay.
Didn't own the land. Didn't own any of the equipment.
Okay.
You leased it.
Oh.
So in my case, I leased all of that from City Services Oil.
Okay.
All I owned was whatever the inventory and tools were in the shop.
Oh.
So I literally bought a gas station in I know this sounds crazy, in 1967.
Yeah.
For about $500.
That's awesome.
Didn't have much inventory, but.
I don't know if that's good or bad, right? Was it making money or?
Yeah. Yeah.
We
made a living.
You bought your job for $500.
Bought my job for $500, yeah.
That's funny.
It was great. Great experience because you learn to deal with people and do basic accounting stuff,
right.
And got ourselves in trouble every now and then, but
sure.
Figured a way out of it.
Was that your first business?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. So how long did you have that before you had
about a year.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Did you sell it then or just close it?
Yeah, okay. I sold it to a competitor across the street. So.
All right.
Great. A wonderful, wonderful learning experience, but I had dropped out of school to run I was going to school, you know, at the time, and I couldn't do both.
Right.
And as the business grew and we picked up some corporate accounts, I couldn't do both.
Sure.
So I had to get to the point, you know, am I going to get back in school? I'm halfway through school, a little better than halfway.
Mm-hmm.
Do I go back to school, get that over with and see what life holds, or do I, you know,
keep rolling
sink
with the
myself
gas
into the gas station?
Yeah. Sure. A 2-pump gas station. I can't imagine the last time.
Yes, regular and premium. That was the.
Wow.
You know, yes.
That's pretty cool. So you made enough money in that year, but then you're like, hey, I got to go back to school.
Yeah, it was killing me.
I don't want to be pumping gas the rest of my life.
Well, we bought a tow truck and you're out in the middle of the night. And
oh,
it's like
sure.
The rain, the snow, and, you know, and there's always somebody wants something done like right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, and we picked up some corporate accounts, which were pretty demanding.
Sure.
Same problem that people have now. Couldn't get good help.
Right.
Could get help, but.
That's so funny.
Yeah, you're in a college town, so, you know.
Yeah. In 50 years, it hasn't changed.
No. It's gotten worse.
True story there.
Yeah.
That's funny. So you finished school.
Yeah.
Okay. And then what from there?
I should
look at what you got here.
I didn't get the jobs I wanted. You know, I interviewed for a couple of jobs. Thought sure I had one.
Okay.
And lost the job to a classmate.
Okay.
Which broke my heart because, I wanted the job really badly, and I was pretty convinced I was the guy.
Sure.
But then it was the other guy, not me.
Mm-hmm.
And another good lesson. I think, you know, if you keep your eyes open, you'll learn a lot as you go forward in life. And so I actually called the guy. It was with a large corporation. I called the guy and said, hey, thanks for at least letting me apply and for interviewing me and let me spend some time with you. I'd just like to know where I went wrong so I don't make the same mistake the next time around.
Fair question.
And he said, well, I just didn't think you wanted the job, Lyle. I thought the other guy wanted it. I didn't sense that you wanted it.
Wow.
And, you know, I it just Wow, yeah, a big wow, James.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're disappointed. You go to the next one. You go to the next one. And then got into the glass business by accident, which I think most people get into whatever they end up doing somewhat by accident.
Fair to say.
Not all, but a lot of people. Answered an ad in a newspaper and wanted to get back to Chicago, which was where I was from.
Okay.
And so got an interview with the glass company, pretty good size one, and went to work for them.
Nice.
Yeah.
Where were you at the time?
In Bourbon, Illinois.
Okay.
I was graduating from Olivet Nazarene University there.
Okay. So that's fairly close to Chicago, isn't it?
Yeah, like 60 miles.
Okay.
Yeah. Working for General Foods at the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Funny. So you in this glass business, was that auto or was that commercial?
I was hired for the auto glass division of a company called Globe Glass.
Okay.
And probably the largest auto glass replacement company in the country at that time.
Oh, wow.
And it only got bigger.
Okay.
I was supposed to, pre-computer, I was hired as an inventory analyst.
Oh.
You know, sexy job.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would
pre-computer.
So you analyzed data from the manufacturers. We've produced, you know, we're going to produce 350,000 Chevy Impalas.
Sure.
And last year we produced 400,000. And the windshield break rate on those cars is this, so the inventory should be that, because we're going to anticipate using this many in the year ahead.
All right.
And so that was, you know, all the analytics were done longhand, manually.
Holy cow.
Yeah, oh yeah, I was all excited about it. came in, with the shirt and tie, suit and tie on for day one, and met with the personnel manager, and he said, listen, we've got a problem in our flat glass division. Which was a company called Tyler and Hippick Glass.
Okay.
Old line, old. Globe had bought this company in the late 60s. It was struggling, and they said, we've got some problems over here. Big shortage of supervision and line supervision.
Right.
We'd like to take you out of what you were going to do and put you over there at least temporarily.
Okay.
And I said, well, okay, I guess. You know what? I don't know anything. And they said, and we'll give you $10 more a week to start.
A week?
Yeah.
All right. That
was big money back then.
Yeah, right. I bet.
And that should have been the warning, James.
Right.
You're giving me more to take this other job.
Yeah, you could have just told me you're taking that job, right?
Yeah, I was happy.
Right.
Until I got over there and found out the reason they'd given me more money.
No.
And the next words out of the guy's mouth were, okay, well, go home and change your clothes. You know, come back in like a flannel shirt. It was in the fall. Flannel shirt and some blue jeans or something. Forget all this suit and tie stuff.
Yeah.
So off we went, you know, and it was exciting. It was exciting.
Huh.
Yeah.
That sounds kind of cool.
49 years later, you know.
You're still in it.
Still in the glass industry, yes.
So you have some stuff on the paper that you sent me where you did some pretty fancy buildings.
We did do some nice stuff, yeah.
And you did, like, there's part of the O'Hare Airport.
Yeah.
The United Terminal. I'm like, I probably saw that yesterday. And then you had Caesar's Palace interior, that had to be a huge deal.
Yeah.
And then what else do we have on Hoover Dam Visitor Center?
Yeah, I think we listed some of those to show that we, you know, worked in different segments of the industry and around the country.
You're dealing with some crazy architecture stuff.
Yeah, a little bit.
Or I imagine the architect is saying, make it look pretty, and you guys are the ones that actually have to make it look pretty.
A lot of times you argue with the architect about, you know.
I bet.
Yeah.
There has to be a logistics.
Yeah.
And then I imagine the financial aspect comes like, we can do this, but.
That always kicks in.
There's going to be a price tag to this. Yes. This isn't just a vertical pane of glass.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. How did you end up, I guess, how did you grow from there? From starting out in this place, throwing your flannel on. Did they have you out in the field then?
The guy who, chairman of the board, principal owner of the company, a fellow by the name of Joe Kelman, a legend in the auto glass industry for many, many years. Very wise guy. I worked for the company for 19 years directly under him, and then we spun out the one division.
Okay.
But in fact, he's one of three people I've said I thought was a true business visionary.
Oh, wow.
He almost seemed to have the ability to read the future.
Relative
to the industry.
That's helpful.
I love the guy. He was very good to me, and I love working for him.
Yeah.
But he actually had two or three of us, and he said, I want to put you on a training program.
Okay.
I need middle management people, and someday they'll become the upper management people in this corporation, pretty good-sized corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to do this right. So I got a taste, a pretty heavy taste of everything.
Okay.
Which was good. Yeah, I was out in the field, in the shop fabricating, loading trucks, putting glass in, fabricating framing systems.
Sure.
Sent me, you know, back to school for all kinds of things.
Okay.
Everything from, I think the first or second month I was there, you need to get a blueprint reading class. You know, go here and take this class and go here and do that. And constantly educating us and, you know, working us like the dogs that we were.
Yeah.
And it was good. It was a wonderful experience.
Yeah.
And so I got a nice taste of everything.
All right. Well, yeah. 19 years, you probably get more than the taste, right?
Yeah, he was fun, James. He was a good guy. We had a wonderful relationship.
Sure.
He fired me 3 or 4 times. I think I quit 5 or 6 times.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but somehow we stayed together.
It's like a bad relationship, right?
Oh, yeah, it was wonderful, actually.
I've been divorced 7 times to the same woman.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, he was great.
All right. So apparently the firings and the quittings didn't last. Huh?
Well, yeah, he was, you know.
A little temper there?
Yeah, sometimes, you know.
All right.
And at the toward the end of his time, so to speak, he actually called me in and he said, Lyle, if you could do anything, you know, that you wanted to do career-wise for the rest of your life, you know, what would it be?
Yeah.
I'm 42 years old at the time.
Okay.
And I said, I'd work for you.
Oh.
And he said, really? And I said, yeah, you're great. You know, the company's solid financially.
Sure.
I can come into you and say, I want to try this, or I think we should try that. And, you know, you've always been supportive.
Sure.
Put me through grad school.
All right.
You know, I said, you're a wonderful guy to work for, and you give me a lot of freedom.
Yeah.
I had my own division to run. Left me alone. As long as we were making money, I was left alone.
Yeah.
And I just enjoyed the guy. We had a great relationship. And he says, well, that can't happen because I'm much older than you are. I'm not in the best of health.
Sure.
And he said, you can't talk about this publicly yet, but I am going to sell the business.
Oh.
I found a buyer.
Sure.
We're negotiating now. I think it's going to take another 6-8 months to put this together. But,
right.
He's
tapping out.
Yeah.
All right.
So I said, well, okay. So I guess I'll work for them.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, they don't want you.
Oh.
And I said, they don't want me. He says, no, they don't want what you do. Your business is commercial, a completely different direction than they want to take the business.
Sure. Okay.
So they want the replacement auto only.
Oh.
Don't want any of that flat glass, architectural metals and steel. They don't want anything to do with that. They're scared to death of construction.
Sure.
So they really don't want you.
Ouch.
I said, oh, so we have to find another buyer.
Okay.
And he said, I'll give you the short version. He says, I think you and your team should buy it.
Oh.
You guys have worked your fannies off to build it into what it was. And it was a decent company, decent company, great reputation.
Okay.
And he said, you know, you've built it. You guys deserve it. And I said, but we couldn't possibly afford it.
Yeah.
And he says, I think you can. I think you can. I think with some help, I think you can.
Okay.
So we worked out an arrangement.
All right.
He carried a lot of the debt for us for about 6.5-7 years.
All right.
And it worked.
Nice.
Yeah. Yes, the ultimate leverage buyout.
So you and a few other employees?
We bought the company.
Okay.
Yeah, 1989.
Wow.
Height of the leverage buyout craze.
Right, right.
Money everywhere.
Sure.
People doing this every day.
Yeah.
And so we came along at the right time. We were the beneficiaries of some fortunate timing. We were able to raise a little bit of money between he and the bank that we got to go along with the program. We pulled it off.
Nice.
Yeah.
And so you essentially had business partners.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And how was that?
If I had it to do over again, it's a good question, James.
And sure. I don't mean to put you on the spot.
No,
there.
Well, you did a little bit, but because I don't want to say too much. But,
right. Every partnership has its ups and downs, right?
So, yeah. Every group of people has its ups and downs.
So how many people are we talking?
Well, the primary group, there were 6 of us.
That's a lot.
Yeah. The total number of shareholders was 12.
That's even more. Holy
yes.
Cow.
Okay. Yes. But some of those were very minor.
Okay.
And
so they weren't necessarily making decisions. They were supplying some
capital.
No.
And the six that the initial six, we worked together very well. We'd been together for a while.
Okay.
Different different areas of the company were important to us. You know, there was the production operations guy, the production guy was, you know, the field operator was a different thing. So we had a very good blend of a team.
Okay.
The six primary owners.
Sure.
I carried the majority position. We had somebody that had a put up their house and their children. You know.
And say it's a good spot to be, but maybe financially it's a little risky.
Yeah, well, it was okay.
Yeah.
You know, none of us put up enough money to matter. I mean, you know, if we went broke, we went broke. We started over again.
Right.
But it worked. The crazy thing worked. And, but yeah, partners, and you kind of, you know, infer, 12's maybe too
many. That's a
lot. Yeah. And it probably was. Ideally, it needs to be much, much smaller in a partnership.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't a partnership. We were a true corporation.
Okay.
But you still get a lot of people, you know.
Right.
And we made it very clear in the beginning that owning stock in the company does not mean you're not capable of getting terminated by the company.
Oh, sure.
You know, you still have to perform. You still have to follow the rules, play the game right.
So is there a board that decides stuff like that?
Yeah, we had a those six people were the board.
Okay.
And again, we were fortunately got along very well.
Nice. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
I always refer back to bands. You think how many bands last? Even the popular ones that get really, you know, everything's going, then you hear about them having a little falling out.
Yeah.
The Rolling Stones are an anomaly.
Yes, they are.
Because they've lasted decades, and you can't say that about many bands at all.
Our problem, one of our problems, was age.
Okay.
So the six partners were not of the same age.
Okay.
I was actually the kid.
Oh, funny.
At 42.
Sure.
So you start...
at 42?
Yeah, I was the young guy at 42.
Oh.
So you start losing senior management people, and of course then it's, buy me out or...
Right.
Didn't have a lot of problems that way, really didn't.
Okay.
But you have to replace those people.
Yeah.
And that's not always easy.
I've been on boards for nonprofits where they had a lot of older crowd that were kind of, they've been on that board for a long time.
Too long, probably.
And they kind of gave up. So when you're trying to make changes or evolve, they put up a fight. And you wonder, like, why are you putting up a fight? But then in the end, we're asking them to do something that they didn't have to do before. So
right.
It's probably why. So I imagine from a business aspect, it's even worse because then you're talking about livelihoods that you're dealing with instead of just a group.
Well, you get into situations too where, younger guys might say, "Hey, we need to try this. We need to get these pieces of equipment, this machinery, go into this line, if you will." And the older guy's sitting back and saying, "Well, you know what? I'm only going to be here another 2 or 3 years.
Right.
Do I really want to see a bunch of money spent on that?
Why risk it?
Yeah. Why do we really need to do that?"
Kodak felt the same way, right?
Yes, Kodak felt the same way.
We've been doing film for years. Why did it change now?
Look how that worked.
Yeah, not well. Not well. No, it's grow and evolve or die.
You have no choice.
Yeah. So that's interesting. So do you still have this company then?
No.
Okay. So how did you pull the shoot on that one?
We ultimately sold.
Okay.
I won't go into all of that
detail,
but we ultimately sold.
After how long?
Oh, a couple decades.
Oh, it was a while. Okay.
Yeah. I left. I retired in 2011.
Okay. You retired from there?
Yeah. Well, okay. I thought I was retiring for good, but that didn't work out.
I don't know what to tell you here, Lyle, but we're 2019 now.
Yeah, I know. I had a couple of people tell me that, to point that out to me. And I'm not any younger either. But so I exited in 2011.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And it was all good, comfortable, happy?
It was okay.
Okay.
Yeah, it's okay. It was time.
Not too many people got pissed off or anything?
No. It was time.
You know,
there's a time for everything.
Sure. And was that everybody agreed essentially to sell it, or did you just sell your portion?
I sold my portion. I had the majority position.
Gotcha.
So I actually sold my... And by this time, a lot of the guys that were in that group had retired.
19 years is a long time.
Passed away. You know, whatever. Well, this was the second iteration. It was 89, 99, 2009, 22 years. 22 years.
Okay.
Of that group.
Sure.
So, yeah, there were only a couple of us left. And we'd taken in some new people.
Sure.
Some that we shouldn't have taken in.
Oh,
and
that's a thing.
Yeah.
Hindsight's great.
Yes,
not very
is.
Useful.
Yes,
but
it is. Yes.
yes.
At least not for the, not for whatever you're hindsighting, I guess.
Yes.
So you, okay, so after that, what did you decide to do? You're like, hey, I'm retired.
Well, I wasn't going to do anything because I'd signed a non-compete.
Oh.
You know, as part of my package to go.
Right.
Signed a non-compete. Wasn't planning on doing much of anything except if they called and asked me to. Did a little travel, you know.
Sure.
I've told people I probably had the coolest garage in North America because, you know, I got time on my hands.
Sure.
You know, I've got stereo in the garage.
Oh, nice.
You know, track lights over my workbench.
Right.
And, you know, keeping myself busy. We traveled some, took some long vacations. And I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do. Deb Levy called and said, hey, we've got some, we get consulting requests all the time through the business. Would you want some of these?
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, okay. You know, I can't, I was restricted in certain areas, but
sure.
So I started doing a fair amount of consulting work, actually expert witness work.
Oh, like in courts and stuff
like
that?
Yeah,
okay.
Got into some of that, and then your name gets passed around a little bit, so all of a sudden you've got too much of that.
Sure.
And really wasn't doing a whole lot of anything, not really.
Okay.
A lot of charity work.
Mm-hmm.
Became the head landscaper at my church, you know.
Okay, so not charity work having anything to do with glass?
No. Well, yes, but not directly.
Okay.
Only where I could do it and, you know.
Sure.
So
essentially out of the industry except for
yeah.
The, okay.
And so then Deb Levy actually approached me in 2013.
Okay.
After I'd kicked around for a year doing these other things. And said, hey, I think it's time to do something with glass.com. I think we need to try
something. So that had been just simmering in the background?
Yeah. Yeah, all that time.
Oh, wow.
So I said, well, what do you want to do?
Yeah.
And she said, I think maybe we could monetize this thing, I think. So we put a little plan together, and then she went off to get some programming and to do some more research.
Mm-hmm.
I came down with a pretty nasty cancer.
Oh.
Ended up spending the back end of 2013 getting through the cancer treatments.
Oh, wow. Okay.
In and out of the hospital with the, you know, the chemo,
sure.
The body radiation, the stem cell transplant.
Sure.
So I came out of the hospital on January 4th of 2014.
Okay.
Hadn't had much to do with anything for at least 4 or 5 months there.
Yeah.
And so I had assumed that the glass.com thing had taken off.
Sure.
Deb was very kind to me. I was still writing for one of her magazines. And,
okay.
So I communicated with her, but she was kind enough to pretty much leave me alone.
Sure.
She probably called a couple times and I didn't make any sense, so
right.
She stopped calling.
You're in computer line.
Yeah. But so we didn't talk a lot of business during that period of time. So I had assumed that things had progressed and that they'd moved on without me.
Sure.
So after I got out of the hospital and was somewhat coherent, we had a good conversation. She said, listen, the original programming plans and foray didn't work very well.
Oh.
We've almost got to start all over again.
Oh, no.
I said, really? And she said, yeah, we've made some mistakes. We've learned a lot, but
sure.
We've got to kind of redirect ourselves here.
Okay.
I said, okay. She said, are you interested in still being a part of this? And I said, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, okay. And she said, well, I want to start sending stuff to you to analyze and to look at and think about. And I was quarantined for 90 days after I got out of the hospital, so I had nothing to do. I could just sit at the desk
and
read and stuff.
Sure.
Couldn't leave the house.
Oh.
And pretty weak anyway. So the stuff's coming in, and I'm looking at it. And I think it was at that point, James, that it kind of really, the glass.com thing really bit me.
Okay.
Because a lead came in for a job in Chicago.
Okay.
She sent it in. Somebody just called, a random call comes in to, because we're glass.com.
Sure.
And so a call would come in and say, hey, do you guys do work in Chicago? We don't do work anywhere.
Yeah. And for you, we will.
Yeah. So I told her, just start sending those to me. Don't turn anything down.
All right.
And we'll sort through them and see what makes sense.
Say yes to everything. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. And so one day the call comes in for a job in Chicago. Pretty nice job.
Okay.
She sends it to me. I call the potential customer, the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm told what they need. And, of course, I've still got some contacts.
Mm-hmm.
And my non-compete is also up.
Ah.
Not that I wanted to do anything myself,
right.
But I didn't hesitate. I could call, you know.
Sure.
So I called someone who I knew would do that kind of work, and I said, okay. Hey, I've got a job for you.
Right.
Would you want to talk to these people? And yeah, absolutely. Well, it turned out to be a very nice job.
Oh, nice.
Guy called me, he's a former employee of mine. Guy called me, and he said, Lyle, this thing really went well. What do I owe you?
Oh.
And you don't owe me anything.
Right.
You know, I'm just trying to help a consumer.
Sure.
And we just want to put them with somebody who I knew would do the job right. And I said, did you make a little bit of money? He says, yeah, I did very well. And they've even come back for more work.
Oh,
and,
best.
This turned out to be a really nice little lead.
Yeah.
And I said, well, that's great. And he said, well, if I owe you anything, let me know. I said, well, you owe me lunch. You know, next time next time we see each other,
sure.
You can buy me lunch. But after you've repeated this scene half a dozen, maybe 10 times, you start
sure.
thinking, yes.
There is something.
There is a business here.
Right. There's your time. There's value there.
Yeah, yeah. And and we obviously, through Glass.com, obviously have incredible web presence, for lack of a better term. And I think that's been borne out. I mean, I think it was July we had 82,000 visits to our site.
Wow.
People looking for information,
sure.
for references, for whatever, advice. So off we went.
Yeah.
Yeah, off we went.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That is cool. So it's been growing, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah.
And you've been diversifying what you offer.
Yeah, well, we're sitting here. Well, in fact, driving over to you, I saw one of our affiliates. I drove right by his shop.
Oh, really?
Yeah, about less than a half a mile from here, you've
oh,
got
sure.
one of our affiliates. So,
yeah.
While we're sitting here, I'm going to guess that we could have, on a Monday morning, Monday into Monday afternoon, there's a good chance that somewhere between 8 and 15 jobs have come through our system while you and I are sitting here.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I didn't have to talk to anybody other than you.
That's this is presumably that's good.
Presumably that's good, yes, yes.
I'm going to err on the side of caution there. That's funny. That's awesome. And you guys, it's not a very large team.
No.
Right? It's just
three of us.
It's three of you. Okay.
Yeah.
And you're spread out. You're in Chicago and you got...
The other two are in Virginia.
Okay. I was going to say New Jersey. I knew I was
yeah,
wrong.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's got to be kind of fun.
Well, it's you know, for a guy my age, it's been exciting because I met with the programming team in Cincinnati a couple of years ago.
Okay.
And so the average age is probably 27.
Yeah.
28.
Young. Okay.
And I'm used to coming into a very structured office
sure.
and going and, you know, sitting behind a desk. And these guys roll around and the tables roll and the chairs roll. And
sure.
Very mobile. And you sit in this big room, about five of them and me. And, you know, there's screens all over the walls and everything's live, you know. So
sure.
They're punching it in. Okay, look at it. Unbelievable. It's just like a different world for someone like
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
And so it's at one point I said to them, I said, you know, this is just amazing. I you know, I don't even, I'm just overwhelmed by this.
Sure.
I'm not, why do you need me?
Right.
Well, we don't know anything about Glass, but we know, this is what we know.
We know user interface and website, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But yeah.
We don't know what you do.
Sure.
And you don't know what we do, but
it's a team.
We kind of need each other.
Right.
And wonderful, wonderful group and learned a ton. I love the analytical part of it.
Okay.
I love the analysis.
Sure.
It's kind of just something I actually enjoy, you know, having a ball game on and going through the analytics for the day at night. You know,
I always joke with people that I don't watch sports because I'm terrible at math. I was looking, like my kid and my wife get into baseball and it's, you know, end of the world
yeah.
series stuff now. And I'm looking at these numbers and the stats and all this stuff. And how people will throw up a random stat on the TV. It'll be like, you know, this is the last home run when it was foggy out, whatever, in this stadium since the last 72 years with a pigeon flying by.
Yeah.
And I'm like, who is the guy that is digging up these stats on the fly?
Yeah.
Like, just to know that they documented all that kind of stuff. How do they find it that fast?
Yeah, I heard one the other night. You're right. First Mexican-born left-handed pitcher to start a World Series game.
Right.
You know, okay.
You got this off the cuff.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
It
yeah.
Is,
so I get the athleticism and all that kind of stuff. That's kind of cool. But
yeah.
There's a lot of stats going on there.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Kind of fun. You with Glass.com, so I imagine you're paying attention to visitors, where they're coming from.
Oh, yeah.
And what they're doing once they get on the site.
Yeah, if you were in the Glass.com office in Virginia, in one of the conference rooms, there's actually live feeds.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, on the big screen.
That's cool.
Screens, plural.
Yeah.
And so you can actually sit there and say, oh, look, we got a guy from Pittsburgh.
Sure.
Oh, he's on the Autoglass site.
All right.
Oh, look, he just ordered a piece of Autoglass. You
that's
know?
Cool.
Or here's one from, you know, Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he didn't stay. He left.
Sure.
At any given time, you've got 6, 8, 10 people. Some of them are looking up information. We have a glass. You have a dictionary.
Mm-hmm.
We have a thing called the Glass Detective.
Yeah.
So you can actually make contact with glass.com and with a question of, is this better than that? What should I do here? Does this make sense?
Sure.
And we try to be, you know, we don't push product. We don't say buy this or, you know, over that. Try and be very fair. Just try and give them an honest assessment of the situation.
Yeah.
Make recommendations.
You guys have a lot of content on that site.
There's a ton of content.
Yeah.
And now we're starting to do the videos.
Okay.
We've got a couple that are very popular. Daniel Snow, who's our one full-time employee. Great, great guy.
Mm-hmm.
We found out he's very good on camera.
Oh, nice.
So we've got everything on, you know, how to properly remove a sticker from your windshield.
Oh, no. Clever.
To how to tell if a mirror is a real mirror or a two-way mirror where someone could be watching you from the other side.
Sure.
We actually get that question pretty frequently.
Really?
Yeah, from women.
Okay.
I'm staying in this hotel. How do I know that someone's not looking through a mirror at me?
Right.
So we go through how you can tell what kind of a mirror you have.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. How you can tell if it's probably a legitimate mirror versus something else.
Sure.
And, you know, these kinds of things. It's We really try and load up the consumer information base as much as humanly possible.
Okay.
So we've got videos, we've got questions and answers, the Glass Dictionary, all kinds of reference, technical and otherwise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So did you write most of that content, or did you outsource that, or how did you come up with
it? Well, a lot of it comes from the trade publications that Deb is responsible for.
Okay.
U.S. Glass Magazine, AGRR Magazine, All Glass Repair and Replacement Magazine.
Okay.
So these are, a lot of it's content that's been taken from the magazines, technical content about calibration and what have you.
Sure.
And inserted onto the site. Others, the Glass Detective thing is really, I don't know how many dozens are on there.
Yeah.
Where people have written in. And if it's something that we think other consumers would like to read.
Sure.
You know, we'll post it there.
Oh, that's cool.
And we get everything from, I can't get the scum off my shower door.
Sure.
You know, I've tried this, I've tried that.
Right.
So we'll say, okay, well, let's try this, this, and this.
Right.
You know, and if that doesn't work, buy a new shower door.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, those kinds of things.
Hit it with a hammer, see if it breaks.
Yeah, can I replace my windshield?
Sure.
Or can I just have the chip repaired?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do I know when to do which?
Sure.
Those kinds of things.
Okay.
So they don't generate any. They don't necessarily generate any business, but we want
the consumers
to keep coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And we've also found from an analytics standpoint that the more content, more valued content we have, the more traffic is directed to our site. So
yes.
It feeds on itself.
Mm-hmm. Definitely true.
Yeah, through the search.
Yeah, but I tell people content's the name of the game, but it's got to be good and it's got to be relevant.
Yes, that's exactly
right. You're on the side of volume.
Yeah, that you hit the two nails on the head. Yeah, it's got to be relevant. It's got to be useful.
Yeah.
And we work hard at that. We work very hard at that.
Mm-hmm.
We like what we're doing. We enjoy this.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
So what's next for you guys?
Well, we've still got a way to go with this.
We're
trying to put up a couple more options, for lack of a better term, for the consumers. We're branching out into education more and more. We also, as we talked before the show here today, we're also starting to look at educational opportunities.
Sure.
To get people
for installers.
Yes, installers, technicians.
Mm-hmm.
Anything related to glass,
we're
looking for those opportunities where we can start to do some training and and we're in a nice position, James, in that we have the ability to take the revenue we get and plow it back in.
Okay.
You know, it's a luxury at some point. So we have the ability to continue to develop as we go along.
Sure.
And so the next thing right now is education training.
Okay.
Continued education and training. We just had a meeting not too long ago, maybe right after Indianapolis, after the show you were at.
Yeah, yeah.
And we in the session that you sat through,
mm-hmm.
We came out of there and we said, okay, this wasn't bad. We offered up a fair amount of general information.
Yeah, a lot of good content.
Yeah, about business.
I feel it was not well attended for the content that you had.
Yeah, I agree. Bad timing, I think, in the day. And that was a first. We weren't sure.
Sure.
We had a lot more people sign up than showed up.
Oh,
yeah. We had to close off the sign up because we had thought we'd filled the room.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah. And so, but I think it was late in the day, end of the week, people, you know, getting on the road.
Sure.
But out of that, and we had several conversations with people who did attend.
Mm-hmm.
And three of them in particular were kind enough to contact me and they said, hey, that was really good, but.
Okay.
Here's what I think I need.
Sure.
Or here's what I would like to get out of that.
Mm-hmm.
So we've actually redirected our efforts here.
Oh.
And we're going to start a very basic curriculum for these trade shows.
Okay.
Where we get into the basics. A lot of entrepreneurs there. A lot of guys starting their own businesses.
Yeah.
So we want to get into how do I read a profit and loss statement? How do I read a balance sheet? What is fixed cost? What is variable cost? How do I do my break-even calculation?
Sure.
Know? And so after talking with some of these people, we've actually redirected our efforts here. So next year, we'll have a very basic, you know, business 101 class.
Oh, very cool.
For new entrepreneurs, meaning 3 to 5 years and less.
Sure.
Or guys and gals that want to start their own business.
Mm-hmm.
We realized, again, pretty early on after that show that we had shot maybe a little too high.
That's fair.
So let's back it down.
That's fair.
You know, you got to meet the people where their needs are.
You know, it's interesting you say that because I teach a business planning class for a while now, and I've taught a fair number of entrepreneurs, met with some through the coaching, and I meet a lot of people that are very good at their trade, and they want to start their own business, and the challenge that I have with them is that a lot of them don't realize what they don't know. And so for them to break into learning something, to take a class, to register for a class, would be either the challenge is the admittance of not knowing it, or it's just even the awareness that they don't know it.
Well, I think it's easier to go to a trade show or an event such as Autoglass Week and attend a class.
Sure.
You know, you're one of...
Yeah, you're already there.
People, you're there. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to stand up and say, I'm an idiot when it comes to accounting or I'm not quite sure how to market my products. If you remember some of the questions we had in that session. And I think it's easier for them, less threatening.
Mm-hmm.
And we're free. You know, we're
That's
there.
That's fair.
We're giving you the information.
Right.
And in the case of the three people that contacted me, I had multiple conversations with them.
Oh, very cool.
And they were, and I caught on pretty quick that, okay, we need to back it down.
Sure.
Just from some of the questions they were asking.
This was 202 instead of 101
thing. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. We hit them with 202 instead
That's
of 101.
That's fair.
You're exactly right.
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair. People, starting a business can be challenging and there's a lot to it. And I imagine, I always feel like it's the first time you buy a house, you're like, whoa, we have to look at 5 million houses because this is a lot of money. And the real estate agent's like, oh, you want to look at another house? And then the second house you buy, you're like, I know exactly what I'm looking for, where, how much, blah, 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 blah. You can bulldoze a realtor because they're going to try to sell you on something you don't want.
Right.
And when you're a first-time home buyer, you're just overwhelmed. You go to closing. They want you to sign 7 million documents. And you're like, what is all this?
Yeah, none of which you really understand.
Yeah. And second time, I feel like there's a lot of smoke and mirror there. Mm-hmm. But second, third time you buy a house, you're like, okay, I get this. Yep. No big thing. So, you almost have to remember, when I first started my business, what did I do? Like, I messed up. That's what I did.
Yeah, almost everybody does. My son started his own business 4 years and 2 months ago.
Okay.
And he had run one of our branches very successfully for a period of time. And when I was going away and getting out, I had actually said to him, you know, what do you want to do? Your dad's going away. And he says, I mean, I don't know exactly what I'm going to do, but so he worked for the guy that we sold this business to for a year and then went somewhere else and finally came to see me one day. I was just out of the hospital.
Yeah.
And a couple of months. And he said, I want to start my own business. I made a mistake. I should have worked something out when you were still, you know, kicking.
Oh, wow.
And I made a mistake.
Sure.
Will you help me?
All right.
And so I think what helped me a lot, James, was going through that process with him.
Okay. Oh.
Because his degree was in engineering, not sure. in business.
Okay.
And everything was always done for him.
You know,
the P&Ls are prepared. He reviews them with somebody, but they're not. You know, he's not creating much of anything informationally speaking. He's producing his jobs.
Sure.
He's running the guys.
All right.
And so I think that helped me understand a few things too.
Sure.
You know, very bright, highly motivated person, and a wonderful son.
Yeah.
And but just inexperienced in certain areas.
Sure.
So the more I thought about that, in connection with what we learned in Indianapolis, you know, we can do this. We can tailor this in the right direction for people and give them something of value.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you have a good crowd there. So
great crowd.
Yeah.
Great crowd.
I think I can do well.
Yeah.
Before we go, I want you to mention your book. Is it Broken Tomato?
The Broken Tomato, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, that's a pretty cool book. Because there are stories that run the gamut of, even though they're glass industry specific, from a customer or sales point of view, they are business general. Because the people that you talk about in there, we've all run into those types.
Yeah, we have. Well, it was, again, Deb Levy and Key Media and research. When I was in the hospital, they had been bugging me to edit that thing for a year.
Oh, really?
And I kept telling them, no one's going to read it.
Sure. You
know, nobody's going to care.
Right.
And so now I'm in the hospital, you know, getting my chemos. Can't do anything. Can't go anywhere. So I thought, what the heck? So I sat there and I edited it and sent it back to them.
Yeah.
And remarkably, they printed it. And then it shows up on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, The Broken Tomato by Lyle R. Hill.
Nice.
It was kind of an ego thing, you know.
Yeah.
In fact, I was getting my stem cell transplant, just had started, and my wife walked in the door at the hospital and said, "This came in the mail for you," and it blew me away. You know, I had no idea they were actually doing it.
Sure.
So it was kind of cute.
That's cool.
Kind of a collection of stories.
Yeah.
Yeah. And listen. Before we close,
sure.
I brought your book.
Nice.
You got
some post-it notes in there.
I did. Yes. Well, one of them was because I had a couple questions for you.
Okay.
But the other one was The Bold Business Book by James Kademan. This is a good book.
Well, thank you.
As I told you, in Indianapolis, I don't agree with everything.
That's fair.
But this is a darn good book.
Well, I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah,
I put a lot of time in. Yeah,
and I want you to autograph it while I've got it here.
I will totally do that. I'll be happy to do that.
Ooh, I keep hitting the microphone.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be happy to.
Yeah, great.
That's totally cool. Well, I appreciate you being on the show, Lyle. This has been a lot of fun.
Thanks.
I feel like we could talk for another 3 hours.
Thanks for the opportunity. Very kind of you.
Cool. This has been Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggles, stories, and triumphant successes of business owners across the land, coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. If you are listening to this on the web, please like, subscribe, and share. My name is James Kademan, and Authentic Business Adventures is brought to you by Calls on Call, offering call answering and receptionist services for small businesses across the country on the web at callsoncall.com, as well as Draw-In Customers Business Coaching, offering business coaching services for entrepreneurs in all stages of their business on the web at drawincustomers.com. And, of course, The Bold Business Book, a book for the entrepreneur in all of us, available on Amazon and wherever fine books are sold. We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners, as well as our wonderful guest, Lyle Hill, president of Glass.com. Thank you, Lyle.
Thank you.
This has been cool. It's always fun to have people that have done so much.
Well, thank you.
I love that. Find us airing at 103.5 Wednesdays at 1 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m., as well as at sunprairiemediacenter.com. Past episodes can be found morning, noon, and night at the podcast link, found at drawincustomers.com. Thank you for listening. We will see you next week. I want you to stay awesome. And if you do nothing else, enjoy your business.